entries represent different symmetry classes. So each class has a specific types of discrete symmetries, and this part represents spatial dimensions, and that represent for given dimension, for given symmetry class, the space of quantum ground state is partitioned into integer sectors, integer number of sectors, and for that too, there are two sectors which is separated by quantum phase transition. And the thing I want to do today is to basically show you how we reach this conclusion. So we wanna derive this result today. And again, here's the review from yesterday. So there are two underlying strategies to derive the result. So one is to find a topological invariant, which is stable against the deformation of a state. And if you find such invariant, you are halfway done. That's one approach I want to explain, but I will keep this later. The thing I want to do from now on is the second approach, which is which we call the bulk boundary correspondence approach. So as I showed you with many examples, the topological insulators or topological superconductors always support the gapless degrees of freedom at the boundary, and basically you don't see anything in the bulk. So the idea here is to just classify. First, we go to the boundary of the system and classify possible types of behavior at the boundary. And if you find anything special at the boundary, we walk back, and the presence of special type of boundary state suggests the presence of the topological bulk. By special, I mean the following thing. So first of all, these states appearing at the boundary of topological states are very stable. So there's no way you can gap out these excitation at the boundaries. And actually here, I want to mean something more. So the states, for example, state in the integer quantum Hall effect or quantum spin Hall effect, it's completely gapless and it's completely metric. So there's the states carrying current. And what we're gonna do is to put some disorder potential, let's say along the edge, and try to make them insulating. But in integer quantum Hall effect, this is not an option because the edge state of the integer quantum Hall state is always flowing in one direction. So there's no way to scatter your electrons backward. That means there's no way to stop electrons, basically. And this basically happens for all these examples. I want to somehow promote this phenomena to a guiding principle. And we look for the boundary of the system, put the impurities, some random potential, and try to see if you can actually make this boundary state insulating. If it is not possible, it is very unusual because what is known in conventional condensed matter system is that if you make disorder potential sufficiently strong, you usually localize electrons or fermions. And apparently, if that it doesn't happen, it is exception of the so-called Anderson localization phenomena in solid state. And if this happens, I claim these states must come from the bulk state. That is the other parameter of the superconductor. So it is a mixture of PX wave superconductor and IPY wave superconductor, and it is a T breaking superconductor because we have an I here. So it's a description of other parameter symmetry. Okay, but before doing this, I want to discuss this criterion more precisely, because in integer quantum Hall effect, as I said before, it's kind of easy to see why you cannot localize your edge state. But in higher dimensional system, state is not always flowing in one direction. It's an isotropic system. So the states can have momentum of all directions. That means you can, in principle, have a channel that can flip the direction of the momentum. So this assumption, this guiding principle, is non-trivial in higher dimension. So I want to first show you the example of the three-dimensional topological insulator. And at the boundary, we do realize some surface states. And I want to see if these states actually stable against the disorder or not. Then I will apply this guiding principle to all these states to get the classification. So just to remind you, the example I want to look at is the Z2 topological insulator in three spatial dimensions. And in the table, it's here. It's symmetric class A2. And the spatial dimension is 3. So there is Z2 classification. If the quantum ground state is in the non-trivial sector, let's say in this sector, the topological insulator supports odd number of Dirac fermions. These represent Dirac cone. It's energy dispersion of Dirac fermions. And for non-trivial case, we support odd number of them. So I'm going to disorder the surface and try to see if it is possible to localize the surface state. So here, for simplicity, I just take one. So this is the dispersion of the Dirac fermions represented by the first term in the Hamiltonian. And we add the disorder potential. It's schematically comes from the many scatterer located randomly, where capital R sub I represent the location of impurities. There's the one important symmetry in symmetry class A2, which is the time reversal symmetry of spin 1/2 particle. So we keep this, and we ask, what is the random potential we can add satisfying this condition? And this VR is the most generic form of the disorder potential. So now there's a conventional theory of Anderson localization for the symmetry class A2, which is also called symplectic symmetry class. So even before the discovery of topological insulator, people discussed about the disorder potential in the presence of spin orbit coupling. So there's a conventional theory by these people. So here I just plotted the conventional phase diagram for the conventional case. There are only two phases. One is a metal, and the other is insulator. And apparently, there is a quantum phase transition separating these two phases as you increase the disorder potential. The plotted here is the so-called beta function for Anderson localization. So it's a function of dimensionless conductance. And this is the variation of the conductance as a function of system size. And here in this side, it's positive. So if you make your system bigger and bigger, since this is positive, conductance grows, so you get the very good conduction. On the other hand, in this side, it's negative. So as you change, as you increase your system size, you eventually get zero conduction. That is why it's an insulating phase. So the question is,
L is really the size of the system. You just build a bigger material and it changes its
phase. Yeah, it's a IR, exactly. It's a size of a disorder region, if you wish. And you have a reservoir here, but you want to make it bigger and bigger conceptually.
So usually you change some UV cut.
That's right. But here I'm just changing the system size itself. Yeah. In the reality, you mean? In the reality, there's another length scale, which is the so-called phase breaking length scale. I mean, here I'm assuming my quantum physics is completely coherent. There's no, let's say there's no heat bath or some kind. But in the reality, there's many disturbance that try to destroy the coherence of electrons. So the physics I described here is applicable up to some phase coherence times, phase coherence lengths. And the question is the if your disorder strength, if it is converted into the length scale, let's say mean free path, which is called mean free path, if it is larger or phase coherence length or not. But basically, I'm assuming phase coherence length is larger than mean free path. This is the for two dimensional case. That's specific to this class. In all the other classes, not all the other classes, but in most other classes, there's no matter insulator transition. But this is the this is so-called spin orbit matter is known to have one would say this is unusual because as I put disorder, you don't localize, but this happens in this class.
Like again,
Young of four. What suggested by Young of what is suggested by Young of four is that the use of beta function, but not the phase diagram itself. Yeah.
And also master fermion. You have master fermion, you can localize them.
Typically we start from metallic state, a metallic phase with a good Fermi surface there. It's a gapless fermion.
Yeah, gapless, but
massive. Okay, it's massive, yeah. But here too, it's but I have a Fermi surface, you have a chemical potential.
Okay,
Yeah. So I didn't include chemical potential explicitly, but it can be changed. In that case, okay, it's I don't see mass here, but it's similar to the case with the Fermi surface. Yeah.
Can I ask some questions? Who are the gang of four?
Okay, historically, of course, it is a gang of four in the Chinese history, but here it is a gang of four coming from, Anderson, Damakrishnan, and okay, I forgot the other two. yeah, actually, they're the fifth guy. That complicates the story, but I don't mention that today.
Well, what's a fascist history?
Yeah, in both Chinese history and in both. Okay, yeah, that's right. Okay.
What's a massive gapless? You're tuning the chemical potential?
Yeah, here it's a mass of real electrons. So your dispersion is quadratic. It's a quadratic band. So it's
Do it on
that board. Oh, good idea.
You mean quadratic dispersion?
Yeah, quadratic dispersion, but of course it's gapless. Because your chemical potential is here, so that means it's a gapless and massive. Somehow it's contradictory in relativistic sense, but it's completely reasonable. Okay, that's the conventional theory.
And is G a coupling that explicitly enters in the potential, or is it something else?
That is converted into the conductance. So here there's the disorder potential amplitude. So this. Microscopically, this can include many parameters like concentration of impurities, the dips of the impurity potential, and so on. But here, I'm just plotting the conductance. The assumption here is that everything is actually described by this single function. It doesn't depend on many microscopic details. That is the theory presented by Kango Fo. Okay. So I want to say, okay, I went too far. Actually, I'm missing one slide. Okay. So basically, I want to claim this conventional phase diagram doesn't apply to the surface of topological insulator. So there's the one way to see that in terms of effective field theory approach, which we took. So I want to, and since I will use this approach in later part of the discussion for other symmetry classes, I want to briefly describe what is the effective field theory for disorder electron problems is. So we start from microscopic model. In this case, it is a single particle Hamiltonian with impurities. But as I said, there are many microscopic parameters which control the physics, the Hamiltonian, but it doesn't necessarily control the universal property of the problem. So we want to describe this in terms of effective theory, which kind of has captured the universal feature. So I didn't have a time to present the details of derivation, but just believe me, there's the effective theory description in many, like in many systems in condensed matter physics. And this case, it's an effective field theory is a nonlinear sigma model field theory. So this is the action defining effective field theory, and the field variable entering here is a matrix field. It's a matrix depending on space, and this matrix is a member of this coset manifold. And although microscopic model can depend on many parameters, effective field theory depends on only one coupling constant. It's a nonlinear sigma model coupling constant, but physically it is the inverse of conductivity. So now you can see clearly.
Is this really yes. Lagrangian with two space plus a time?
That is actually a good question.
Here,
when you speak about disorder only problem, there is a simplification because disorder basically conserve energy. It's not like an interaction. That means you can basically forget about the time direction. So you can study your theory for each omega. And that's why I'm dropping time direction. So for this purpose, I can actually use two plus zero dimensional field theory. That's why this is two here. OK, so that's two dimensional effective field theory.
What does Lagrangian mean?
Yes, that's another good question. So here, n can be anything, actually. So this n represents. So in other localization, what you want to study is conductance, local density of state, and so on and so forth. They are all written in terms of single particle Green's function. So you want to take any product of a single particle Green's function, and you want to see the matrix element of this. Single particle Green's function. If you take n such single particle Green's function, there's n here. Actually, yeah, let me just say this way. I mean, there's different formalisms. That's why sometimes this n can mean different thing. But here, it's basically n is a fixed number for a fixed physical quantity you want to look at.
Does Q describe a single electron, or does it describe many of them?
Q here actually represents, I didn't say any physical interpretation of this model, but here Q represents the diffusive motion of electrons. So if you have many impurities in this sort of electron systems, you have a diffusion mode in the electron system. And the diffusion mode has a pole, so it's very similar to Nam-Gorston mode. And we interpret this as a symmetry breaking. So basically, using this formalism, this sort of electron program is viewed as a symmetry breaking phenomena. And Q encodes, as I said, it's a diffusive motion of the electron. So it doesn't necessarily mean it's like any electron and so on and so forth. It just part of the electron motion, which behaves like long wavelength bosons. Okay, so there's a nice way to see why the surface of topological insulator can be different from the conventional symplectic metallic system. So for basically, there's this mathematical fact. Second homotopy group of the nonlinear sigma model target manifold, which is here, it's that two. That means there are two sectors in the configuration of your Q field which are not talking to each other. That means you can weight these two sectors independently in principle. And that actually happens for the case of this topological insulator. For the conventional case, or for the surface of trivial insulator, two sectors are equally weighted, so you get this partition function. But it turns out for the surface of topological insulators, two sectors differ. The Boltzmann weight of two sectors differ by sign. So this n here is 0 or 1, depending on the sector you are looking at. So there's a huge cancellation in the path integral in this nonlinear sigma model field theory. So this has a dramatic consequence.
This is similar to Witten's SU2 anomaly in four dimensions.
Very good. That's, that comes next. Yeah. But let me first show you the result. So although we can see very clear difference between two cases, unfortunately, this type of interference effect is very difficult to analyze. You need some non-perturbative too. But here we just simply analyze this microscopic model. But there we need to average over many different disorder configuration. But anyway, that can be done for this specific case. So here we compare first the conventional spin orbit method. So this is the beta function I described. It's positive here, it's negative here, and there's one crossing, and this is the conventional transition. That's not for topological insulator. But if I do this same calculation for the surface of topological insulator, beta function turns out to be always positive. That means you have a perfect method. Conductivity, conductance always flows to infinity. So this is kind of similar to what we found in integer quantum Hall effect, but in terms of more, it's more complicated because, as I said before, on the Fermi surface, you have all kinds of P in all directions. It's not like one directional propagating mode. So one thing, there's the flipping of momentum as you hit the impurities, but it doesn't actually affect the conductivity of the surface state. It's a perfect method. Now,
so what would have happened? You must have been assuming a spherical surface, what if it's a torus or something?
Here I did something more naive. I just take, first of all, I take a very flat surface, and I didn't include a bulk in the calculation, but we somehow make a cut off by hand.
Right. You talked about pi 2 of the...
Right.
Maybe I misunderstood. That corresponded to
that's right.
A ball or something.
That's right. But usually the assumption is your field falls off to some constant configuration. In that case, you can just identify all these, the edge of your disk, which is a planar, but then you get the subset S2. So with this assumption, my argument applies equally well for the disk as and the S2. And here I'm just taking disk.
If you made a cylindrical shape, it would buy you for a ball.
I think it should apply to the cylinder too. But in that case, you identify the edge of the two edges of cylinder, so you want maybe if you take this radius large enough, and anything happening here is it's up to QR approaches to the some constant here, then you want to identify this as cap. That's I think it's okay too.
So I was thinking of like a toroidal shape.
Oh, toroidal shape.
Toroidal shape, because that's different.
Yeah, if this is the case, the question is if this is, it's not pi 2.
It's not pi 2 anymore.
Yeah, it's not pi 2 anymore. I don't know the answer to this question, but I think physically, if torus is large enough, I shouldn't distinguish torus and disk, so I think it doesn't change the result. So now, since there will be a comment about the SU2 anomaly, I want to show you very quick I want to show you something very quick, which is the Frege-Gauss derivation.
So why do we get plus or minus sign for different sectors? So when we derive a nonlinear sigma model, we start from some fermion system, and they couple the interactions by Hubbard Stratonovich field, auxiliary field, which is nothing but Q. And then we integrate over fermions, which are gapped. But when we do this, we get the Pathian in this case. So we have to compute functional Pathian for given configuration of Q. But the Pathian, since it is a square root of the determinant, it can have either sign plus or minus. The way to determine the sign of Pathian is the we want to compare two configurations, and we wanna compare the two Pathians and try to fix a relative sign, which can be done this way. So take two configurations, Qi and Qf, and assume they're in different topological sectors. So the question is, if there is the extra sign for this configuration as relative to the Pathian of this for this configuration, the one way to do this to determine the phase is just interpolate these two configurations. And then your Pathian, which is can be defined as a product of eigenvalues, as you change your configuration, these eigenvalues move around, but there can be a crossing. When this crossing occurs, that means there is a relative minus sign in the functional Pathian, and we did this explicitly. And for the case of topological illustrator, if two configurations, here it is Q sub naught and Q sub 1, they are in different topological sectors. If you interpolate, there will be a crossing in the eigenvalue of the operator you're looking at. So yeah, it's pretty much like a SUT global anomaly. Except here it's not anomaly because it's not K theory.
Well, that's what you can do with this.
It's not anomaly. If these two configurations are identified as the same configuration, that means inconsistency. But here it's just a two different view. Yes. Okay, so that's a technical part. But anyway, this is the surface of topological insulator, to summarize, is dramatically different from the conventional spin of the metal. So I want to do this calculation for all different types of symmetry classes and in all different dimensions. Here, it is the summary of two-dimensional boundary of three-dimensional bulk. So I have 10 different symmetry classes of fermionic systems. They have different types of discrete symmetries. And here is the summary of nonlinear sigma model. So for each class, you get different nonlinear sigma model. And the one I described is just here. This entry represent the possibility of having an abnormal term in the nonlinear sigma model. If there's no abnormal term, the universal behavior of the surface state must be the same as the conventional theory, which is not tied with bulk theory. That means you should be able to localize your electrons. Now, for some classes, you simply don't have such abnormal terms. But for these cases where I have red colored regions, there are five classes where you do have these abnormal terms in the nonlinear sigma model. And these just represent types of abnormal terms, but I think I don't explain that in detail. But I want to just say for these symmetry classes, there's a possibility that you can have you can avoid Anderson normalization. And for all these classes, it turns out to be true. Now, as I said before, once we find states which cannot be localized,
it must come from the bulk theory. So for these five classes, we claim there will be a topological bulk state in three spatial dimensions. We continue this construction. So for nonlinear sigma model, we know where, in which dimension, and for which target space, we can have a topological term, abnormal term. So this is the classification of topological instability of superconductors. These are the nonlinear sigma model describing surface, let's say. So whenever this entry is there, we can have a Wessel-Zumino-Witten term, which is some abnormal term in nonlinear sigma model in one dimension lower. On the other hand, if this entry is Z2, I can have the Z2 topological term, which is very much the same as the one I showed you before. For these classes, we can avoid induction localization. So by using this table, we construct this table where I see topological bulk states are. It's basically from the boundary theory. For lower dimensional cases, there is a particular nice, and maybe better than nonlinear sigma model, there's a nice description of Anderson localization. For example, for 1+1 dimensional boundary, it's a one dimensional system. So it's basically just a wire. It's a wire. And to describe the transport property of the one-dimensional region, we can use just a recursion relation. So you have an S matrix describing the scattering from here to back here, or maybe scattering from here to here. There's the S matrix defined for this region. But if we want to look at the localization problem, you want to make this region bigger and bigger. But that can be easily done because of the one-dimensional nature of this geometry. You can just iterate your transform matrices, and this calculation can be done by just incrementing the lengths. So in this case, we don't have to use nonlinear sigma model, but we just need to use the transform matrices, which is a function of L, which is a function of the size, the length of the wire, and we want to just discuss the asymptotic behavior of the transform matrix for long enough wire. And this can be actually done. And what is interesting here is that you actually find 12 such, actually 15 such asymptotic behavior. Remember, there are only 10 symmetry classes, but you get extra 5. And again, we claim that for these 5 classes, this must be related to the edge of the two-dimensional bulk state. Let me show you some example. So there are 10 symmetry classes, but some symmetry classes allow two different transform matrices. And one is basically used for the conventional quantum wire, but this turns out to be the... So the people have been wondering, what is the meaning of this transform matrix? Is there any physical system which actually is described by this transform matrix? People didn't know, but it turns out these additional transform matrices describes the edge of two-dimensional topological insulators and superconductors. You can go further down in dimensions. So now if you want to consider 1+1 dimensional Bourque theory, the boundary is zero dimensional. Again, you can ask, what is the effect of interaction of the disorder on this zero dimensional system? Since it is a zero dimensional, notion of transport, notion of localization doesn't really apply. But in terms of just a random system, it is a random system with zero dimensional support, which is nothing but a random matrix theory. Now, it turns out there are 13, it's basically, well, with some minor modification, there are 15 random matrix ensembles. So again, some symmetry classes allows
two different random matrices, two different ensembles of random matrices. And again, people didn't know. I mean, this was found Ivanov in 2001, for example. Maybe it's earlier a little bit. But there, it was not clear why we can get more random matrices, more random matrix series than symmetric classes. It just 10. Why we get 15? It turns out the answer is these additional random matrix ensembles should describe the boundary, the end state of the topological 1 plus 1 dimensional system. So somehow, all it works very, very well. So this all agrees with the nonlinear signal model analysis. So that's basically why we get the table. So this is the table. So that's that is the description of the bulk boundary correspondence approach. And I want to move on to the first approach, but if you have any questions.
Yes, this is a nice question, but is this classification valid for non-zero temperature as well, or is it just fixed by symmetry? What is the statement about?
This is zero temperature.
This is zero temperature.
I think if it is a higher dimension, if it is non-zero temperature, you want to classify density matrices rather than Hamiltonians or states, but here it's a zero temperature result. And then there's some discrete symmetries imposed on the Hamiltonians or states.
But then can you really realistically use this to make any experimental predictions?
Yeah, for example, it depends on what is a prediction. But for example, from these we see many entries which actually not realized experimentally before. Yeah, so maybe I can show you something. Yeah, so for these red circles, I know very good experimental realization, like integer quantum Hall effect, Zeta topological insulator is here. But for example, what is this one? It was not identified before, but because of this classification, they claim there should be a so that the meaning of this symmetry class is S waves, it's a singlet superconductivity with time reversal symmetry. So before this table came out, I think people didn't expect to have anything topological for singlet and P symmetric superconductor, but it turns out it's possible. And we constructed such state explicitly. So maybe there's a chance to realize this system experimentally. That's this part. For example, this part, we got this classification, but if we look at the examples, it turns out Helium-3b is actually this class with integer 1 or minus 1, maybe. But this directly predicts that the surface, there must be a surface state in Helium-3b, and it must be stable, and it must be perfectly propagating for any amount of this order. So it's kind of topological prediction of the fulfilling Helium-3b. And I hope this should be verified soon. But since Helium is very immune to perturbation, there's not many experimental way to detect this surface state. It's not charged. But I think in principle it can be done. So these are some of the predictions. Okay, so for the first approach, the meaning of topological is more direct. So I want to show you what is topological about in the first approach. The first approach, we try to find the topological invariant. Then it's more direct because then if you know your invariant is quantized, you know that your state is stable. And if two states have different invariant, since the invariant doesn't change for adiabatic deformation of the state, there must be a phase transition. So what is topological invariant? Well, basically we look at this the topology and differential geometry in momentum space rather than in the real space. So
So this is the caricature of the single particle energy levels. You have a momentum, have an energy, and you have many single particle states. And for the ground state, you feel all these states. So such ground state is then the function of these, the function of the wave function at each k. And if you specify the states occupied for each k, you specify your state. But since for this field state, there is a gauge symmetry, you can freely mix. If you have n field state, you can freely change your basis. You can just rotate. That means there is a gauge symmetry. So it means if I just take a correction of the eigen function at each k, it is just a unitary matrix, but because of the gauge symmetry, we model out this gauge symmetry. That means for each k, we define a map for the Brillouin zone, for the k space, we define a map from Brillouin zone onto this space. It's a space of wave function, and then for each k, we have a wave function. And unfortunately, I use the same symbol Q, but this Q doesn't mean any nonlinear signal model here. But that is actually the projection operator for the ground state. Now, you can ask if there is a non-trivial winding in this map. And it turns out, for two-dimensional Brillouin zone, there's a winding. It's that. And this actually represents the fact that there's an integer quantum Hall effect in two dimensions. So for different elements of this Z, sigma X is basically represent each sector. So for three dimensions, there's no non-trivial winding. So there's no three-dimensional quantum Hall system in isotropic setting. So for each non-trivial element of the homotopy group, you can define the invariant. So this U is a set of eigenstates labeled by A hat and B hat at each k. And from this, you can define momentum space very gauge field. So you change your k adiabatically, and you ask what is the overlap with the original k that defines the gauge field. And out of gauge field, you define the curvature. And of course, you can build topological invariant for the curvature. For example, for two-dimensional case, basically the integral of the flux for the two-dimensional Brillouin zone is invariant. It's an integer. And it turns out this is nothing but sigma xy in the unit of e squared over h. And this continues for all even space dimensional topological insulator with symmetric class A. So let me show you the table again. So what I described before is a topological invariant for each that for even dimensions. So now I want to describe what is this that mean for class A3. So I believe nobody can remember what A3 means, but it turns out A3 means there is the one symmetry which anti-commute with Hamiltonian. So there's the unitary matrix, and because of in the basis where you diagonalize this matrix, your projector is off diagonal. And it turns out this Q is, so this capital Q is a member of un plus m mod un cross um, but this off diagonal block is the member of um. So in this case, we look at the homotopy group for u, that is integer in three dimensions. And the topological invariant is a winding number built out of this Q matrix, the small Q matrix. Now, that is a very nice and simple story for class A and S3. And there are many complications for all these remaining eight classes. The problem for remaining classes is the following. So there is a discrete symmetry relating. Yes?
I think I got confused on something earlier. Why are you looking at pi 3, for example? That's a Phi 3 in momentum space?
It's a momentum
space.
Where is this
here in momentum space?
So again, I'm assuming my wave function has a very simple asymptotic behavior for high enough momentum, meaning high energy wave function is very simple. But that's the assumption.
So there's some assumption about what happens in the ultraviolet, so to speak, or in the very short wavelengths.
Yeah, so I think I'm basically assuming in the ultraviolet. That's assumption, let's say. But here, one can ask the same question as before. What happens if my Brillouin zone is a torus? Of course, that is a torus for solid state system because it's a lattice system, so it's actually a torus. I didn't speak about this lattice system, but in lattice systems, since you don't now look at the pi 3, but it's something else. And actually, it gives a different result. So the good example is actually three-dimensional quantum Hall effect. So although for the continuum, this is zero, that means we don't expect anything non-trivial, but actually state on the lattice does have z plus z. And basically it's like a quantum Hall effect in each direction. But that's because of the stacking structure. You need a lattice structure to have a stable such state. So here's what I'm looking at. It's based on some assumption. Basically, I'm looking at only the continuous. No lattice. Okay. So the complication for the other symmetry classes is basically discrete symmetries, like Angular's asymmetry, relates the state at k and state at minus k. That means you cannot really look at this map because now there's a constraint coming from the discrete symmetries. So for example, for this Q field, with additional discrete symmetries, there's this type of constraint for each different symmetry classes and similar thing for remaining four. But we just view basically that this constraint basically just limits the possible value of nu. So for example, with this constraint for these three, this is three, just an integer, but for C2 and BD1, because of this constraint, you only realize 0, 1. For C1, that's more interesting because you always realize even integer and so on. There's a possibility that this constraint creates new topological sector because now two sectors which are connected before might not be connected with constraint. That is actually happening across D2 where winding number is zero, but there's a D2 sector. That is a complication I mentioned before. But this type of complication we don't see in the bulk boundary correspondence. So I think I talked about this. And since I mentioned Hume-3B, which is particularly a nice example, let me briefly mention this example. So it's a Hume-3B, and the Gogol-Dejean equation is this one. So there is spin indices, so it's a 4x4 for a differential operator. The normal part of the Hamiltonian is quadratic in K, but now the other parameter is a function of K, and there's a gap through all excitations. Now, just we saw in chiral wave superconductivity, there are two phases separated by the phase transition, which is mu, and it turns out when mu is negative, we are in the trivial phase. But if mu is positive, we are in the non-trivial phase. So in this phase, we see the stable surface state, which is the surface should be the testable in Hume-3B. One interesting feature here is that if you look at your real space many-body wave function, it is again algebraically decaying, and so this is a very natural extension of two-dimensional
LRP wave superconductor or more in the state to 3D machines.
You can't have any interesting statistics.
That is a question, but I don't know. I didn't look at the excitations here. In Helium 3B, there may be a loop type excitation because space can wind and it is a stable excitation.
A vortex, which then has interest.
Vortex is a point particle, but in 3D dimension, you have to somehow extend into a loop. So, yeah, answer is I don't know. Maybe it's a very interesting. So, okay, I didn't get to the point where I speak about entropy, but I think I can speak about entropy in, since I have one more day. Sorry for those of you expecting the entropy talk, but I hope that this is also interesting too. Okay, so here's a summary. So we classify topological phases, topological insulator superconductors. And well, there are three predictions, outcome of prediction. One is not directly related to the topological classification, but that's the property of the surface itself. So in three-dimensional the topological insulator, which is for which we have many experimental realization, we predict basically the surface must be perfect metal, and this is unusual, I would say, in terms of standard of condensed matter systems, and I hope this should be tested in experiment. At least since now they know there is a surface state, and maybe they can measure transport properties systematically. And okay, for helium 3D, I already mentioned, for topological singlet superconductivity is good T. In three dimensions, I also speak about. Last thing I want to mention is that there are many open issues, and one big open issue is the effective interactions. And here I listed just four. So one thing is, do the non-interacting topological phases survive in the presence of interactions? Since there's a gap, we don't expect the small inclusion of interactions change the physics dramatically, but as a matter of principle, if you have an ability to change your interactions, the two sectors which are distinct in the non-interacting classification might be actually connected, because you have now more space to explore. That is something we don't know. So let me show something more interesting. So here, up to this point, it's a paradigm extending integer quantum Hall physics. But of course, in integer quantum Hall physics, we know that there's the more fascinating phenomena of fractional quantum Hall effect. So the question is, do we have such state in topological insulators and superconductors in higher dimensions? And finally, so up to this point, it's all about fermions. But we have more bosonic systems like spins, and we're just bosons. And do we have such nice classification for bosonic systems? Well, I don't have any good answer for this, but I just want to advertise that it is perfectly possible, for example, to cook up a kind of artificial model, which is purely bosonic model. But it turns out this model has fermionic excitations in the spectrum. So this is nothing, there's nothing fermionic here, but these interactions are chosen carefully or artificially. But this model can be actually written completely in terms of fermions with some constraint. So there are bosonic variables, which is this alpha psi, which is just the like a Pauli matrix. It's more complicated than that, but it's a bosonic operator, like spin. But there's a nice way to represent bosonic models in terms of fermions. And it turns out there's a class of model where you can represent your ground state as a in terms of fermions.
So I would say for these type of states, these type of bosonic models, since fermions can emerge, then we can speak about the vacuum for these fermions. We can still be able to speak about this classification. Of course, it's a subset of the subset of the bosonic ground state, but nevertheless, we could hope that maybe this can apply to a wider context. For today, thank you.
You have time.
Quick question: where did you assume fermions in your original classification? There was just some Z2 symmetries in Hamilton.
Our motivation was maybe coming from integer quantum form quantum simple system, for fermionic system. Usually bosonic system, well, I would say it's more boring because it just condenses. But of course, they don't have to condense. So I don't know. But
your classification seemed to just cover.
Yeah, fermions.
Everything.
Where?
You started with a Hamiltonian and a bunch of discrete symmetries.
That's right.
What was the dimension of fermion?
So there are many ways to do that. So for this momentum space topology I mentioned, there's the coset space, which is complex Grassmannian. And you can view this as a, so for each ground state, basically I claimed there's a map from Brillouin zone to target space that truly describes fermionic ground state. But of course, this is not true if you have an interaction, because for interaction, you cannot get to your ground state simply filling your single particle space.
So it was going from the classification to these nonlinear sigma models that you were working with.
So here in the nonlinear sigma model, as we talked about, we assume there's no interaction, because if I include interactions, I have to consider D plus one dimensionals. But here, because of the solar problem, I drop the one dimension. Yeah, so that's.
Are there any other questions? If not, let's thank Shinsu again.